The chance to play against opponents who approach the game differently than you and your familiar playgroup can be a big learning opportunity. You get to see decks that you would never face otherwise, learn how other players try to enact their game plans, and test your own skills as a brewer and a pilot against people who may never have seen your playstyle before either. Hello and welcome to another episode of Gemstone Mine. I'm John, and today we're doing a recap of lessons from Command Fest Philly. The event was a great time. I got to travel with co-host Alex to visit and enjoy some good games with great people. But the goal of this channel is to bring you some knowledge. Not just me gush about how fun the event was, how great it was to meet a lot of other people from the community, how many good places there were to eat at Reading Terminal Market. So today instead, I'm going to talk to you about three commanders who really impressed me at the event. The first commander I would like to talk about would be Rocco Caporetti Caterer. Michael Levine, a member of the Mind Sculptors and one of the Mono White guys, piloted a lot of Rocco this weekend, and his version of the list is a fairly flexible stacks build. I will make sure to drop a link in the comments, be sure to take a look. Michael talked with me a little bit about his list while we were waiting for the event to start on Friday, and he told me his biggest concern with the list was how mana-hungry it was. In his list, we see him address this with 17 pieces of ramp, three of which are artifacts, Soul Ring, Mana Crypt, and Jeweled Lotus, two of which are true rituals in the form of Elvish Spirit Guide and Simian Spirit Guide, and a crop rotation to access Gaia's Cradle more consistently, which, with all those creatures, makes it a very powerful source of ramp. Even at 30 lands in the deck, Michael was trying to look for cuts to up that number to 31. The deck does try to slow its opponents down with 5 mana denial effects, creatures of Archon of Emeria and Collector Oof, as well as non-creature spells with Null Rod, Root Maze, and Stony Silence. Those creatures are particularly easy to get access to in this deck, both just with Naya Color Identity as well as having Rocco as a backup plan in the command zone. In terms of Rule of Laws, the deck is running Archon of Emeria, Eidolon of Rhetoric, Aethersworn Canonist, and Deafening Silence, which seems a little light for a CDH stacks list, but the intentionality in these choices is clear when you realize that the deck can still pull off its food chain combo through Deafening Silence, as you'll be casting only creature spells to combo off, and the other Rule of Laws are all on creatures, which you can exile to food chain when you are ready to go off. This is very similar to what we see in some stacks-inclusive versions of Razzicats. The ability to remove your own stacks pieces to go for the win is a really powerful way to slow down your opponents without necessarily hampering your own game plan. Other stacks pieces in the Rocco list include Chalice of the Void and Sanctum Prelate, both of which can stop opponents from winning or from being able to interact with you, and are very easy to play around with Rocco as your win condition. We also see Aven Mind Sensor, as stopping opponents from tutoring remains powerful, and Dryad Militant, a 2-1 Dryad Soldier for either a green or a white, which reads, if an instant or sorcery card would be put into a graveyard from anywhere, exiled instead. This serves as a roadblock to Underworld Breach decks or Kess decks, which doesn't necessarily stop Academy Rector from being able to fetch food chain in the way that a card like Rest in Peace might. A creature-based stacks deck seems to lean into what Rocco wants to do anyway, making the game long enough so you have the time to ramp into Rocco's X mana cost. While several of the wins that I saw from Rocco came off the back of Academy Rector fetching food chain, the deck also had an impressive ability to pivot off of its food chain lines and still win through classic Kiki-Jiki combos because of the presence of a tutor in the command zone. It made it seem very strong. Another stacks player thought that he had disarmed the ticking time bomb that was Rocco's Academy Rector with a Rest in Peace, only for Michael to switch game plans and still close out the game a turn later with Kiki-Jiki, Village Bellringer. Michael ultimately piloted Rocco to a record of an 11-2 over the weekend, playing both into scheduled CEDH events and dedicated CEDH pods with other people from the community. I asked Michael why someone might consider playing Rocco, and he had this to say. I think Rocco is a great choice if you want to play a creature-focused deck that can be interactive but still close out the game quickly. I think traditionally competitive players who love turning creatures sideways but also want to be able to interact end up playing Winota, Heliod, or a wincon-less stacks deck like Timna Kamal. Rocco plays a bit like Winota without having to play a bunch of Winota fodder, Heliod without having to forgo good ramp and null rod, and Timna Kamal with a much faster win condition. And it also sometimes just has a turn 2-3 win, so you sometimes get the excitement of a turbo deck without having to go all in on the strategy. I also had the good fortune to get into a scheduled CEDH event with Kai from the Spellseekers. I brought my pet deck, Malcolm Caddis Polymorph, to the event, and our pod included both Najeela and Kess. Kai brought Armix Thrasios to the event, and very quickly reminded anyone who thought that Armix's 5 minutes of fame were up that Armix is still a force to be reckoned with. Since Armix isn't a hugely popular partner outside of CEDH, allow me to introduce anyone who isn't familiar to Armix Filigree Thrasher, a 3-2 legendary artifact creature golem for 2 and a black with partner and, whenever Armix attacks, you may discard a card. If you do, target creature defending player controls gets minus X until end of turn, where X is equal to the number of artifacts you control, plus the number of artifact cards in your graveyard. To be clear, Kai only needed 2 artifacts to make it impossible for either Malcolm or Najeela to stay on the battlefield. The downside to this being that Armix required the cost of discarding a card, which most versions of Armix work around by partnering it with a blue inclusive commander. Thrasios and Chrom are both very common choices in CEDH as they provide repeatable card draw for the deck to fuel its removal, as well as card draw just being good in general. While I tried to play around Kai's Seat 2 Turn 1 Mystic Remora, see our episode last week on Feeding the Fish, Kai ultimately wound up playing a Rhystic Study to follow it up, and at that point, the choice was either to pay the Rhystic Study tax or fall way behind the Najeela and the Kess decks. Armix has a lot of similarities to Spellshapers, an odd creature subtype originally from Mercadian Masks, which effectively turned any one card in your hand, per turn cycle, into a specific card from Magic's history. Silverglade Pathfinder is one such example, a 1-1 Dryad Spellshaper for 1 and a green with 1 green tap, discard a card. Search your library for a basic land card and put it into play tapped, and then shuffle. If the text of this card sounds familiar, because it's Rampant Growth. There are several other Spellshapers, some of which see fringe play in Commander. But Armix provides conditional removal with no additional mana cost. There is the nominal downside of Armix needing to attack rather than just safely tapping it, but Armix usually means that the defending player is going to be disadvantaged when it comes to blocking it profitably. Armix does require some build arounds to work well, but in CDH it's less of a deck building restriction. Armix itself being an artifact spots you -1/-1 for free. Kai's list in particular runs 21 other artifacts, including Shimmermere, significantly more than the 7 which are on the CEDH decklist database version of Armix Thrasios. And, honestly, Armix was routinely shrinking creatures by -3/-3 very easily in that deck. The Armix Chrom list on the database, meanwhile, runs an average of 17 artifacts, and that number generally explodes when Dockside Extortionist resolves. This isn't really outside of the norm for a lot of CEDH decks. But once you start to step down in how tuned the decks are from CEDH, you really do want to make sure you're investing in a fairly hefty base of artifacts, as you're unlikely to be running all the broken zero-drop mana artifacts that CEDH is built upon. Overall, there are a ton of partners from Commander Legends who still need to be explored more thoroughly, and I don't think people should be writing off Armix quite yet. I also think there are a number of new commanders from Baldur's Gate that are very interesting. Among them, Abdel Adrian, Gorion's Ward, deserves some special attention, I think. For 4 and a white, we get a 4-4 legendary human warrior with, when Abdel enters the battlefield, exile any number of other non-land permanents you control until Abdel leaves the battlefield. Create a 1-1 white soldier creature token for each permanent exiled this way. Abdel also has Choose a Background. Co-host Alex built 2 Abdel Adrian decks over the weekend in Draft and Sealed, respectively, and even in the Draft, the deck, while very slow to get going, was extremely grindy once it got its feet under it. Both times, Alex combined Abdel with the background Candlekeep Sage. Whenever this creature enters or leaves the battlefield, draw a card. Now, there is a very strong blink theme in Azorius in Battle for Baldur's Gate, so it's not really a surprise that the deck was able to do some powerful things. But Abdel has also drawn comparisons during preview season to a well-known CEDH win condition, World Gorger Dragon. World Gorger Dragon combos with Animate Dead and similar effects, where Animate Dead brings World Gorger Dragon out of the graveyard, and then World Gorger Dragon's ETB exiles all permanents you control, including Animate Dead. When Animate Dead leaves the battlefield, World Gorger Dragon dies and goes back into the graveyard, causing all of your permanents to enter the battlefield, including the Animate Dead you used to bring back World Gorger Dragon. Your lands and artifacts enter the battlefield untapped in this case, allow you to generate an infinite amount of mana as you continue to reattach the Animate Dead to World Gorger Dragon until such time as you end the combo. Battle for Baldur's Gate provides a background which unlocks access to Animate Dead and similar black enchantments like Dance of the Dead and Necromancy as a win condition in Agent of the Iron Throne. A background enchantment for 2 and a black with commander creatures you own have whenever an artifact or creature you control is put into the graveyard from the battlefield, each opponent loses 1 life. This combo allows Abdel to generate infinite mana as long as you have access to some mana rocks, create infinite 1/1 soldier tokens, and deal enough damage to each opponent that they lose an infinite amount of life. This is a pretty strong win condition in Orzhov, something that CDH decks in that color identity have traditionally struggled with. But there are some additional hoops needed. Abdel being in your command zone means he can't be discarded or entombed. You'll need a way to get Abdel into the graveyard to start the combo, in addition to getting an Animate Dead or variant of it into your hand to kick the combo off. What's really interesting about Abdel is that all the tools you need to combo with the commander also exist in mono white. You've probably heard of Restoration Angel. 3 and a white for a creature angel, a 3/4 with flash, flying, and when Restoration Angel enters the battlefield, you may exile target non-angel creature you control, then return that card to the battlefield under your control. If Abdel and Restoration Angel both enter the battlefield at the same time, you can stack the triggers so that Abdel's trigger resolves first, exiling Restoration Angel, and then Restoration Angel's trigger resolves second, flickering Abdel and returning both creatures to the battlefield, once again allowing you to stack the triggers to generate an infinite number of bounces and ETBs. White has a number of effects in the same vein as this, including Felidar Guardian, Oblivion Ring, Journey to Nowhere, Fiend Hunter, and On Thin Ice. And since Abdel is a commander who can choose a background, you can create a deck with any two-color identity you really want or just stick with mono-white. The ways to get both creatures to enter the battlefield at the same time, off the top of my head, would be cards like Eerie Interlude, Ghost Way, or cards like Second Sunrise. You can also get the combo going if you can flicker Abdel while Restoration Angel is already exiled with Abdel's effect, such as including another flicker creature like Felidar Guardian. Felidar Guardian enters the battlefield, causing Abdel to flicker. Abdel leaves the battlefield, and then it's going to return at the same time as the Restoration Angel. Both of their triggers go onto the stack, and you're off to the races. Azorius seems like another strong option, as Candlekeep Sage would allow you to draw your deck and then win with Thassa's Oracle after pulling off the combo. Blue also gets a few ways to get the combo off by flickering both Abdel and one of the other combo creatures, such as Ghostly Flicker. Displacer Kitten doesn't directly combo with Abdel, at least not in a way that I'm aware of, but it does provide the ability to generate a ton of value while also being a combo engine in and of itself. You could potentially use it to reset the Oblivion Ring type enchantments to control the board while you're building towards your win, for example. Of note, this list could theoretically just let you Thoracle for value instead of the win, as you could just blink Thoracle off of Abdel's ability to reset it and trigger its ETB when the game claws again when you finish drawing out your deck. Blue is going to have a harder time getting those 4 mana value cards out of the library, though. Polymorph could theoretically do the job, but then it also requires a way to blink both Abdel and your flicker creatures to get the win, so it's still a 2-card combo at the end of the day. Celestine offers fewer options to blink, but provides many more creature tutors to access your win conditions, including Alatamiri's Call, Eldritch Evolution, and Finale of Devastation. The weakness in these colors is that you're probably leaning into Mana Dorks for most of your ramp, and getting a haste enabler can be rough in Selesnya, creating another hoop for you to have to jump through. There also aren't really any great backgrounds for this strategy, the best probably being Master Chef, 2 and a blue for a background that lets your creatures enter the battlefield with an additional +1/+1 counter on them, theoretically just letting you leverage a pseudo-anthem in order to make your tokens bigger. Boros seems like it might have the least going on for it at a glance, but Kiki Jiki and blink creatures like Felidar Guardian and Restoration Angel are already a well-explored combo line. Infinitely Blinking, Recruiter of the Guard, and Imperial Recruiter will also let you get every creature with a power of 2 or less or in a toughness of 2 or less into your hand, which you can then cast with your infinite mana. Imperial Recruiter can also function as another tutor for Felidar Guardian to begin to combo off with. And once armed with infinite mana, Street Urchin is a background that would let Abdel win the game on the spot, as this 1 and a red enchantment gives commander creatures you own 1, sacrifice another creature or an artifact, this creature deals 1 damage to any target, basically allowing us to spend our infinite mana and all of our soldier tokens to immediately win the game. After all that discussion of some interesting commanders, I'd really like to close this episode out by shouting out my real favorite part of the event, the gathering. I really missed being able to play Commander with new and old friends at a Magic Fest or now at a Command Fest, and the opportunity to meet so many new people and play against so many interesting decks was truly awesome. Shoutouts to Alex, who played a Selesnya deck with the wrong commander by mistake and still managed to score a win. Shoutout to Jonas, who got his first taste of CEDH after Josh from Elder Drunken Highlander gave him a Paco Halden deck to play with. Shoutout to Mike, the CEDH dad, for flexing with a CEDH version of Krom and Kodama, which did a ton of awesome nonsense. Shout out to Charles the Mono White Guy and Josh from Mind Muscle Magic, who brought a whole new experimental format to try out. Shout out to Braden, who really did his best to explain Dan Dan to me. Shout outs to Mark Anthony, Mav, and Surreal for being truly awesome people. And shout outs to Rebel Sun, whose Gale Waterdeep Prodigy deck probably would have made the list of things for me to talk about at the event if I had been better at managing my time so I could actually have gotten in a game with her. Did you make it to Command Fest Philadelphia, or any of the other Command Fests in the past year? What was your favorite experience so far? Any wild brews that you came across or awesome pulls which inspired new decks? We'd love to hear about them. You can leave us a comment on YouTube, where we are Gemstone Mine Podcast. Give us a like and a subscribe as well if you've enjoyed this or any of the other episodes we've done. You can add us on Twitter, where we are at GemstoneMineMTG, or you can email us, gemstonemindpodcast@gmail.com. Until next time, I'm John, and this is Gemstone Mine.